about them too. About?
Well, the Russian customs service has made a tax agreement between Russia and Kyrgyzstan in order to impose customs charge on the timber. And the problem is that the tax agreement isn't published, and in the Russian constitution, it determines that for unpublished law, it's unapplicable. So this system doesn't have accessible, the law is not accessible to the citizen, so we can't impose a duty that the citizen doesn't know of. It's contrary to the principle of legality. So the customs services demand it unconstitutional.
So, maybe some other opinions from this group or
as far as I learned from the judgment of the Constitutional Court in Helsinki, an international treaty which is not itself ratified can be applied to that extent in which it doesn't contradict domestic law. Only in this amount.
So, we're talking about this case, or?
Yeah, we're talking about this case, but the institution was judgment about the result of another case. But still, it is around the same with this case. Okay, but, well, the solution is that it shouldn't be applied unless it's published, officially published. But still, if the provisions of the treaty are the same as the provisions of the domestic law, surely they can be applied. If domestic law already has these provisions for which international treaties are.
Mm-hmm. But as much as you remember, the main question of this case is a little different. So. Let me again remind this. So, you citizen A filed a suit against the customs service, of course, yes. And the detective contended that it was an exempt from customs law. But he argued that charges were under the terms of the agreement, and the question was, is this treaty to be applied or not? Because it was not published officially. So that was a main question, okay?
No?
Why not? It is not.
Because all international agreements that are required to be published.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe some other opinions from this case one. Okay, let us see what the court decided. The court of the first instance ruled in favor of the plaintiff, in favor. But the customs service appealed. The appellate court found that even though the treaty had entered into force, it remained unpublished until for some time. When the plaintiff challenged the charges imposed, since the treaty had not been officially published, the court held them. The appellate court upheld the position that the agreement was not subject to application. So, and let us remember now that one of the necessary juridical conditions, an official publication. And thus, if a treaty maintaining is not officially published yet, then it cannot be applied. Okay. Case number two, please. There is another group. I guess I remember here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Who is reported this for in this group?
Okay. So the case was about the question that the Estonian court had decided in favor of probably a woman who wanted to get to.
Which court, please? Which court? Which court?
Estonian.
Estonian, yes.
Estonian court decided in favor of a woman who wanted to get alimony, you know, from a man who was a Russian citizen. And now woman filed an application on the execution of this decision on the territory of Russia. She relied on a convention on legal aid in civil, family, and criminal cases. But now the charge of two men, regional court, has a problem that how to decide, as Estonia has not acceded to this convention on legal aid in civil, family, and criminal cases. And now we had to answer to the question whether the mother has the right of implementation of this Estonian court judgment in the territory of Russia. And we decided at least that no, because Estonia is not party of this convention. And the reasoning may be probably this, that execution of the court decisions is a part of the right to fair trial. And the court who will decide yes or no, whether to execute this decision or not, has to know whether all the principles of the fair trial have been followed in the court procedure where this about this alimony is decided, but the guarantee will be probably that the Greek state has acceded to this convention. But if the Greek state hasn't acceded to the convention, the Russian court cannot be sure that all the principles have been followed in the first court procedure.
Thank you very much. So please. I agree with the answer. I think it also says that Article 34 on the Vienna Convention, which says basically that a treaty does not create rights of use for a third party. Yeah.
It's another
party
situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much. It's very important. So maybe someone else. But in principle, you are right, of course. And what was the final situation? The Tumen Regional Court, of course, should have refused enforcement for fulfillment of this decision due to the fact that Estonia was not a party of the CIS Convention on Legal Aid. According to international law, if a country is not involved to a treaty, the latter does not create neither rights nor obligations for this country. Of course it is. And let us remember another necessary juridical condition to participation in a treaty of another country, of another side, of a dispute. So, but, what was, in fact, I guess you will be surprised just because, you see, the Tumen Regional Court satisfied the claim of the applicant based on this convention, of CIS convention, which was I'm sure that it was its mistake of that court. So, but nonetheless, that was its solution and decision final. But again, both you are right, of course. So, case number three about the Constitutional Court. Group number three, so please. Yes.
This case was the incident. The first case, a citizen was forced to pay extra customs charges and the increased customs rates came from an international agreement that, although had not been published or actually objectively enforced, it was temporarily put into force, and this was in accordance with Russian federal law. And this citizen objected to the legality of this application before the publishment of the treaty, and appealed to the Constitutional Court. Well, we saw that. And this is the place where it's a bit similar to the first case. A very, very important argument in this is also that if you, before publishing a treaty, you really can't put obligations on especially private actors. And we saw that this applies even in cases where the states themselves have, according to somewhat agreements, used these treaties. Or obliged them, and I see that okay, states can make up their minds in the way that how states as actors work with others, but that does not mean that it would entail obligations for private actors as well, because for private actors to navigate in the legal system, publication of treaties like this is very important, so it would be unconstitutional.
Against the
European Convention of Human Rights. Okay, thank you. Yeah, it was what Mr. Kovac about the European Convention of Human Rights, that it was most likely called under additional protocol 1, article 1, which says that you can only interfere in this right to privacy when you have, when it's in accordance to law. And the European Court of Human Rights usually interpret this in accordance law, that it needs to be published so the citizen know what is the law.
Yeah, it needs to be published, yes, right. But what about this case? Should it be applied, this treaty or not? Being unpublished, but being in temporary.
I think that states can maybe make agreements between each other that it can be enforced before it is published and before it enters into force, this treaty, but that only has legally binding value between the states and not towards citizens.
Yeah.
So basically, when it comes to citizen B, it shouldn't be applied to him.
Shouldn't be?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Someone else? Oh. Okay, in principle, you are also right. Again, the main question of this case was, can be a treaty temporarily in force before it's entered into force officially? And another one, can it be applied without official publication during this time? And what was the decision of the Constitutional Court? The court held consent on a temporary application of a treaty before its entering into force means that this treaty becomes part of the domestic legal system. It means Russian legal system, and is subject to application as well as treaties in force. Then, Non-publication of such treatise is departure from the principles of a rule of law state, legal equality and legal clearness. Then, thus, temporarily applicable treaties which are not published must be not subject to internal or domestic implementation and application. And finally, the legislature, it means the Russian parliament, ought to provide for procedure of publication of temporarily applicable treaties of the Russian Federation. After this, any temporarily applicable treaties may not be applied further on further if not published for general attention. So, you are, yes, of course, in principle. But at the same time, one judge at the Constitutional Court of the Russian Federation announced and wrote his separate opinion. And he was a bit disagreed with the final official decision of the Constitutional Court. And one of our participants in our team, in our seminar, is actually an assistant assistant of that judge. So let us please ask him just to say about this separate opinion of this judge.
Thank you. Yes, quickly, of course, I will not discuss and analyze the whole decision, the whole dissent and opinion. I just want to explain some problems of the decisions which were mentioned in this separate opinion. First of all, yes, there is a very global and very large problem that those acts which affect human rights and citizen rights and freedoms, they cannot be applied before their publication, because without this, the presumption of knowledge of law cannot exist. But the problem is that in this particular case, even if this agreement between the governments of the three countries is published, the one problem still exists, because actually there are also some statements in the Constitution and the Constitutional Court practice concerning those treaties, actually those legal norms, which are in the sphere of tax law. And there is a special provision that law and norms which establish taxes and fees, or just make them higher, make them bigger than previously, these acts enter into force in a special manner. There are some special periods of time after the adoption, after the publication of this act about taxes, and before entering into force. So perhaps we can suppose that this act is published officially, but still it cannot enter into force at the same time, because according to the tax law or principles of tax law of the Constitution, there must be a special period of time before these norms enter into force. So this is, I think, the first main question, and I think that just the Constitutional Court failed to establish this problem, or just didn't want to answer this question. And finally, the Constitutional Court answered the more general question, but did not answer this specific question about this tax agreement. And the second point, I think, is just a small drawback of the decision of the Constitutional Court, very strange. If you look at the authoritative part of the decision, it is stated here that according to the decision of the Constitutional Court, the federal authorities are obliged to publish all all temporarily applicable treaties. So this is about this kind of treaties we are talking about. All of them. It's, let me say, some kind of general measures which Constitutional Court also may provide that is important human rights. The measures directed on the improvement on the legislation. Actually, there is no need to publish all these agreements because the case is about those agreements which affect personal rights and freedoms. But there is a huge amount of departmental agreements which also are temporarily applicable, which absolutely do not deal with human rights and freedoms. And actually, there is no need to publish all these hundreds or thousands of agreements, only those which affect human rights. And I think that the third and the last one point is that the question which was raised during the deliberation, it was raised by the representatives of Ministry of International Affairs, that actually we even do not have a special special source of publication. That's what Dr. Budkov was talking about in one of the last classes, that there must be a special source or the applicable source of publication, of official publication. And for example, they said that it's impossible to publish all these treaties in a special gazette of the Ministry of International Affairs, which actually is directed for these purposes. But I think that the way out of the situation exists because now we have the fourth official mass media. We have Российская газета, Russian gazette. We have Собрание законодательства. No, I don't know how it is in English, composition of the legislation.
Combination of legislation, yes.
Yes, a Парламентская газета, parliamentary gazette. And the fourth one is now an internet site. It's an internet site. You may just try it. Gov, I mean government, gov.ru. So it's also an official source of publication. So there are no problems with publication. All documents of any amount, any number of documents on this site. And so since that time, and of course it's much more effective, it's faster than a wait when this publication will be printed and will be spread among magazines and so on. So that's also there.
Yeah, thank you very much. And concluding this topic, every private person or legal entity, of course, even all courts, must know and must remember always about the necessary juridical conditions for use, for implementation and for application of international law norms within the domestic legal system. You, of course, remember that. And now we are starting the next topic, which is called as correlation of international and Russian law. Correlation. Or, in other words, it sounds as the hierarchical status of domestic and international norms in the Russian legal system. About hierarchy. So, I remember that was one of your questions in topic number one, in one of our first classes. And now we are coming to this logically, step by step, as I told you. Let me now change tactics a bit and start not with a short introduction, but with some brief files of some cases. So, I just briefly announce you some cases or to some exciting cases, exciting, just because in these cases private persons or individuals or citizens challenged the acts of the federal government. So their questions were not just private rights, maybe personal rights, but more generally. They challenged again the acts of the federal governments. So in case number two, number one, two citizens applied to the Supreme Court to challenge the validity of the federal government's regulation. The regulation of the federal government. They contested the importation into the Russian Federation from Hungary of irradiated fuel from nuclear reactors or processing there. And in their demand, they referred to some provisions of some federal laws. And they argued that such an importation was to be authorized only if the state ecological expert examination had been carried out. But the representative of the government, federal government, replying on these claims, noticed that there was an international treaty concluded by the governments of Russia and Hungary. And the regulation of the government in question has been issued in accordance with this agreement. So on what basis did the court make its decision? And as you can see, the main question of this case was federal law and intergovernmental treaty, which is preferable to be applied. Treaty or this intergovernmental treaty or federal law. In case number two, the group of military servicemen retired filed a petition to the court on the wrong calculation of their pensions. And they granted their claims on the federal law, also on federal law. And the Circuit Court of the Military District granted the plaintiff's statement. But Military District prosecutor filed a protest against this decision. On his opinion, the decision violated the terms of the international agreement for the CIS member states. His protest was considered by the military collegium of the Supreme Court. The collegium has determined that the federal law, the resolution of the government, and the agreement of the CIS have been enforced. All three acts have been enforced. The agreement has been an international treaty, but was not subject to ratification and entered into force on the day of its signing by representatives of the contracting powers. So what decision do you think the Collegium has taken? And here, the main question is federal law or not ratified interstate treaty, not intergovernmental, but interstate treaty. And in case number three, the company called Business Women applied to the Supreme Court requesting that some paragraphs of the act of the federal government to be recognized as contradicting the federal law. It is contradicting. and restricting activity of the society, of this company. The Supreme Court, as the first instance in this case, judged this paragraph void and not subject to application. In a cassational appeal, the government of the Russian Federation asked to cancel the first instance court judgment. The government stated that the judgment contradicted international treaties, some international treaties. And not for what law should be a ground of the decision in this case. And the main question in this case is federal law or international interstate ratified treaty. You see, we are talking about different types of treaties in every particular case. So intergovernmental treaty, interstate treaty, international treaty but not ratified, and international interstate treaty and ratified at the same time. But situations are different in every case. And so now you can see that this issue of correlation between domestic and international law is also quite complicated, not so clear and simple. And that's why we should talk about this issue separately and special topic. So this and other real cases illustrate that besides determining the juridical conditions and possibility of use and application of international law norms in the legal system of the country, inevitably another question arises: what the correlation of legal force over the norms of Russian and international law? So the Constitution of our country and the constitutions of just few countries, I would say, not so many countries, provide for a priority of international law over national law, and has such a radical provision. So let us see on some slide. So you can see here, for example, the constitutional Estonia, if laws or other legislation of Estonia are in conflict with international treaties ratified by the the provisions of the international treaty shall apply. The Constitution of Germany. The general rules of public international law takes precedence over the laws. The spiritual political constitution of the Israeli state as well. And then I can also name the constitution of the Netherlands and some other countries. But again, just few countries proclaim this ability of international law norms in the domestic legal system. Not so many. As for Russia, the constitution of our country in Part 4, Article 15, states that if other rules have been established by an international treaty, then provided by the law, the rules of the international treaty shall apply despite the same provisions. But at the same time, you can also see that this provision is just very, very general provision. It's of very general character. And some questions arise immediately. For example, what kind of treaty? Any treaty or specific treaty? Specific kind of treaty? What law? What the law? Or even only federal law? Or any kind of normative acts in our domestic system? For example, presidential decrees, rulings of the federal government, acts of municipal power, and so on. But you see that the Constitution says just about the law. But these questions remain still. So this norm has for our country general legal significance, and moreover, is one of the foundations of the constitutional structure. And as I have just said, this one just complicates the issue, because norms of different systems, domestic law and international law, operate, function, and to be applied at the same time, operate together. And another question arises: how to connect them? How to connect domestic law and international law? How to make them friendly and applicable together, or to choose one or another one? So, to realize all these questions, to come to understanding, we shall answer a number of such questions as: what norms of international law have priority over the national laws? Another one: or what domestic acts treaties have priority? And finally, what rules for the correlation of the legal force of norms operate between treaties and the laws? So answering these questions, I hope we can slowly come to this understanding of this entire issue. So, question number one: what norms of international law? We can see that the Constitution of the Russian Federation talks just about, you can see the here, just about treaty norms. And the treaty, only the norms of the international treaty have a priority over the laws. It means that the constitution of the country doesn't proclaim any priority over international customs. I mean, norms existing in written form, international customs. It can also mean that generally recognized principles and norms of international law being part of the domestic legal system, of our legal system, at the same time cannot have priority over the laws. I suppose here is a mistake at the later stage.
Exactly.
Yes, you're there here. Exactly, just because to proclaim superiority of a treaty, international treaty, being this treaty intergovernmental or interdepartmental or interstate, but not to proclaim superiority of generally recognized principles and norms existing in the in custom, in the form of international customs. I suppose it's an easy mistake.
Especially taking into account that in the previous constitution there was such norms. It was vice versa, as I remember, that the generally recognized principles held priority. It's so strange. Why did they lose this provision? Very strange.
Okay, but yeah, because on the other hand, this is, in your opinion, is a mistake, an error in the, from the legislator. Am I right?
Maybe not exactly from the legislator, but for those who were working on the constitution.
Yeah, on this provision, the
constitutional commission. Yes.
Some working group, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, but the responsibility is on the legislator, not from the group. Which doesn't actually matter. Somebody's responsible for this, which is a production.
No, I think no.
Yes.
No, yes. Nobody can be responsible for a vague or strange provisions of the Constitution. I think the only one way is to interpret the provision of the Constitution in such way that to eliminate this mistake. For example, I think that, and I should say that some our scientists, excuse me for interrupting you, but some of our scientists and very prominent Russian scientists, for example, Tamara Marchukova, is I think the largest specialist constitutional law and international law, despite the fact that she's a criminal proceedings lawyer. And for example, our judge from Eurozes, Tatiana Nishataeva, they all, and probably even the main specialist in international law, Professor Lukashuk, they all, as I remember, said that both international treaties and general international principles have a priority. They say that it's
okay, we agree with that, but then my next question is this, the Constitution already exists for how many years? I think at least
about 20.
So this is not the first time we're talking about this.
Of course, yes.
So then my question is, why isn't there any, why didn't we prepare the legislation of this? Because, of course, it's obvious it's difficult, but it creates a lot of, it could create a lot of misunderstanding.
Yeah. But sometimes they arise. This difficulties.
And if and then your answer is, of course, it's very difficult to restore the mistake in the constitution. Okay, I agree. But then, if we accept this, then there could be also arise other misunderstandings in the constitution. I understand what you say. Okay, this is not exactly. This should be a mistake, but this is not for anyone evident. Because you said, well, I believe, I think this is a mistake. Then you refer to some experts. In my opinion, it's not acceptable that you don't repair this.
I think that
because yesterday you and I had a very large discussion about Article 19 and well, what does it mean and. And you said, okay, you should take this different for granted. But, okay, that's fine.
Just one sentence, because you said that it's very difficult to restore.
Yes,
no, I agree, but I'll say that it's not very difficult to restore. It's not. It's impossible to restore it, because we have to adopt. It's also the new constitution to restore this law. It's in chapter 1 and chapter 2 and chapter 9 are not subject to any amendments. and that is all. And we cannot steal a new constitution. We cannot now make an amendment to these three chapters because we do not have a special body, constitutional meeting.
Assembly.
We do not have. I know that there is a presidential deal now. It's a very bad tendency because actually it was a very good situation that probably actually has been breaking the constitution when during the 20 years we did not organize this body which is provided by the constitution. Mm-hmm. But it was made very reasonable because no one wanted to such a stark reforms. Revision of the constitution. Nobody wanted it. Everybody understands it. It's very serious. But now the presidential bill is in the State Duma, and it seems that something will change, and we will create this constitution as necessary. But now it's just impossible to change anything in this chapter. I think you will.
Yeah.
Are there any preparatory tests? By the constitution, commission to have any electoral preparators that you can read and see what their opinion is about the privacy of the
opinion of whom?
The constitution committee, those who drafted the constitution.
Actually, those who drafted the constitution were not, but it was some kind of ad hoc working group, as you already said. It's not a special body, actually, which deal with the amendments of the constitution. It was an amazingly large group of specialists, of businessmen, of proprietors, of scientists, of all. So I'm not sure. You can just look, of course, at a very big book, very good book. It's called Constitutional Commission, Documents and Materials.
Okay, so maybe they have considered that issue.
Yes, I think we can look at this, but I think that there is no definite question, because if it was, there was no such mistake. I think that the problem was that among those specialists who was dealing with the draft of the constitution, that there were no or maybe lack of good specialists in international law, because actually this norm, and you have already mentioned, there are at least three problems in this norm.
Yeah.
This norm is very bad.
Yeah.
Actually, it cannot act without strong amendments, maybe without strong interpretations, because nobody can understand what this. This international treaties, all treaties, government for government treaties, interdepartmental treaties, cannot be solved. So,
okay. Unfortunately, we are limited in our time today, and now we just have to stop. Just unfortunately, again. But I hope tomorrow morning we can continue and finish logically. And I hope to finish this about this issue and give you some understanding, some solutions maybe. And doing this, please again take some cases and please consider your opinion. So, and finally, on tomorrow's class, we can also discuss these points. So please, again, this group. Maybe it will be another body, okay? And in this group, who wants to? Maybe you can. In this group, who wasn't here? Who wasn't here at our report, please?
The computer
thing. So now let us make some short break again to change our teachers. The next one is Professor Kogler.
Really?